Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. They can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Dr. Vernon Nepe, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008.
And as you mentioned, Dr. Vernon Nepe is an MD and a PhD, and quite frankly, he owns too many other degrees to even mention in this short time. He's director of the Pacific Neuropsychiatric Institute in Seattle, Washington. He's adjunct professor of psychiatry and human behavior at St. Louis University School of Medicine. He's the former director at the Division of Neuropsychiatry at the University of Washington. Dr. Nepe has contributed internationally in specialties of neuropsychiatry, behavioral neurology, psychopharmacology, forensic psychiatry, and a host of other disciplines. He's an author. He's a professional speaker. He's a playwright and a philosopher. His books include The Psychology of Deja Vu, which is a trilogy. He is the author of Cry the Beloved Mind, A Voyage of Hope, and Innovative Psychopharmacotherapy. Okay. His website, which is very informative, is his name, vernonnepe.org. That's VERNONNEPPE.org. And another website where all his books can be purchased is brainvoyage.com. Welcome, Dr. Nepe.
Thank you so much, Bob.
And, you know, I mentioned, obviously, that you wear quite a number of hats and you're extremely, you know, well-credentialed. I did mention neuropsychiatry, but a lot of our listeners, I fear, may not be familiar with that discipline, that specialty of neuropsychology. So can you give us a quick definition of what that discipline entails?
Yeah, neuropsychiatry and behavioral neurology is the interface area between neurology and psychiatry. So it's an interface. It deals with pathology of the brain and medication management of the brain at that highest kind of level, neither neurology nor psychiatry, and that is one of my sub-disciplines, yes.
Okay, and of course, we've been hearing for a number of years from some forward-thinking physicists that tell us consciousness is the ground of all being, which is quite a departure from what we're used to hearing. But the fact is that nobody's been able to discover exactly what consciousness is. I mean, as you see it, I mean, what is the meaning of consciousness?
It's a very difficult question to answer, obviously, Bob, and many people have tried. Let me give you a perspective. First of all, the major perspective you will find in my latest book, which I will mention because you did not, called Reality Begins with Consciousness, A Paradigm Shift That Works. That is a full 500-page ebook on brainwaves.com. The abbreviated form of it is Reality Begins with Consciousness, Key Features, and both a glossary and library, a glossary and also glimpses, pictures, trying to exemplify these various components. And that'll clarify a little bit, but let me clarify consciousness. As I see it, consciousness is a single unitary phenomenon, but it has many guises. It has a guise at the most fundamental level of, if you want, quantum physics, the so-called quantum consciousness. At the next level, it is neurologic and psychological. In other words, it's at the level of the brain, and there are also dynamics. And that is the ultimate end point in the living human. Consciousness is expressed through the brain. But there's another level, and that is the level of higher consciousness. And that higher consciousness is sometimes attained through altered states of consciousness, through meditation, maybe near-death experiences, and maybe this is the kind of consciousness that one experiences in ostensible survival after physical death. So that is the next level of consciousness. Now, all of these are unified. They are unified because we have developed a model where space, time, and consciousness are equal. They all express themselves, and they're always expressing themselves. So if you have a tiny little quantum particle, for example, that quantum particle expresses itself in space, time, and consciousness, or the content expresses itself as mass, energy, and a content consciousness. You have a brain, and that brain obviously has a lot of psychological dynamics, and there are all sorts of aspects of consciousness, the unconscious and the collective unconscious. And you also have impairments of the brain and different levels of consciousness. So that is the neurological and psychological consciousness. And then the third component is these higher aspects of consciousness, which impact infinity, the infinite, at both the continuous infinity, in other words, just a continuity, as well as the discrete, quantal kind of infinity. The little pixels that we talk about are transfinite. So consciousness is enormously complex, but we perceive it as a unit, but expressing itself in different ways for different individuals.
So in the new paradigm that you and Dr. Close have discovered, which is the topic of the book Reality Begins with Consciousness, you're positing... Actually, nine dimensions of consciousness, not of consciousness, but nine dimensions. And the way I understand it, three of those dimensions are dimensions of consciousness, which you just mentioned. So what the other six dimensions are of what?
We postulate that there are three dimensions of space, and we know that. We have a specific definition of dimension. It's not just an abstraction. Dimension has extent, is measurable. We have length, breadth, height. That is three dimensions of space. We also postulate, rather controversially, that there are three dimensions of time. The time is not just linear from the past all the way through to the present to the future, but has an extended kind of component in terms of other dimensions as well. And then we postulate three dimensions of consciousness. So those are the nine dimensions. And in fact, we can demonstrate mathematically. It's not a postulation here. It is a mathematical demonstration, a mathematical proof that there are nine spinning dimensions in our reality. We can only experience three dimensions of space and a moment in time. That's all we experience in our current living reality, and even there it's restricted. We can see, but we cannot see in the infrared or ultraviolet spectrum. We can hear, but we cannot hear across all different wavelengths. But three dimensions of space, one moment in time, that's what we experience. The others are hidden, and this is what's exciting. We believe, and there's some mathematical support for this, as well as support from a variety of different areas, biology and psychology, for example, and physics, that they are divided into three dimensions of space, three of time, and three of consciousness.
So when, assuming that we survive our physical death, We enter a dimension of higher consciousness. Does your theory allow for retained memory? So, you know,
that's a very good question. Our model not only postulates survival after bodily death, a component of our model would be refuted if there was not survival after bodily death. It is required, certainly at a tertiary level. And the question comes up about how. You used the phrase another dimension. Let me use a slightly different phrase, another dimensional domain. In other words, it could be, say, the sixth, seventh, and eighth dimension. And if for others, it might be the fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. It can vary a great deal. And the kind of experience, therefore, might reflect something quite different from what one is experiencing while awake. So relative to our current space and time, when you ask about memory, one may not have memories there. On the other hand, the experience may be very, very different. So, for example, imagine somebody who becomes extremely drunk with alcohol, or for that matter, under the influence of certain recreational drugs. Under those circumstances, their drunkenness might be such that they can remember during that state, but they cannot remember when they come out of it, back to our ordinary relative 3S1T, three dimensions of space, one moment in time, our current worldly living reality. So to answer your question, maybe there are memories. Maybe, certainly in our model, we see this as an absolute continuity. We see it as literally reflecting a continuity of existence, that while we are living, we're still living in all those nine dimensions. It's just some of them are hidden, but it's like there are life tracks. And those life tracks continue when one is dead, potentially. But one's just experiencing a different component of those dimensions. But bear in mind, I mentioned the infinite, and I mentioned the transfinite, the higher kind of countable infinity, the higher kind of quantized pixel kind of infinity, in other words, the discrete components. And those also may be very much linked up with survival after bodily death, as well as altered states of consciousness that may have those kinds of experiences as well.
So there are some people, it's clear from the evidence that we have, that are living here in this physical world, unaware of these hidden dimensions, and yet occasionally they reach certain altered states of consciousness where they catch glimpses, maybe short glimpses, but glimpses nonetheless of these other dimensions. Is that a fair statement?
Excellent. Very fair statement, and very much so. In certain altered states of consciousness, some would say higher states of consciousness, or different states of consciousness, they have glimpses, and those glimpses might be a particular state. We call it an altered state of consciousness, or it might be a particular trait. It might be maintained over time. And maybe this is what survival after bodily death is all about. In other words, one is expressing this whole broad tree, all the branches, and one can make choices all the way through. And those choices don't stop, potentially, after death either. But they may be reflected just in some other aspects from a dimensional point of view. It's very, very exciting, this, because it is a very significant finding. As indicated, we derived this mathematically from a very complex area of physics. But once it's expressed, it's like saying there's a dollar in the mint. Therefore, there's a mint. We certainly have a whole new blossom in terms of ideas.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this, you know, where this new knowledge is going to take us. I mean, I'm sure that one of the things that you recognize is that many of us are making a mistake by thinking of time in this linear fashion, you know, and then everything moves from past to present to future, and then it's final at the end. I mean, we could have so much more growth as a people and as a society if they came to understand, you know, the principles that you're espousing. Is that something? One of your goals is to change worldview about how we perceive ourselves and how we perceive our role in the universe?
Well, put it this way. Let's not use the phrase one of my goals, because that sounds very haughty.
Okay.
But I think it is very necessary for our paradigm to change. And our paradigm may be in the process of changing, because suddenly Dr. Edward Close and I are able to demonstrate mathematically that we're dealing with nine dimensions and nine spinning dimensions. And because of this, this is a major paradigm shift in terms of worldview, certainly. And with this comes a variety of different significant implications. You spoke about time. Shifting through time, one can look at it linearly in terms of now one goes to the future or now one goes to the past. But incidentally, for those of you interested, you could even go on some of our YouTubes on vernonnepi.org. Just click on presentations and you'll see one on multidimensional time that we've just posted. And the major point that we're making is if you use multidimensional time and you understand this, suddenly, you go backwards in time and you think, well, maybe you could change all of history. You could remove Hitler from it all. You could remove those important discussions. You could change the Titanic. Well, what you're doing is if you were going back in time, you might not be going back in three dimensions of space and one moment in time. In fact, you're not, because you're extending time across there. So consequently, maybe you cannot do anything about that past. But you certainly, in this kind of model, might be able to theoretically revisit it, theoretically revisit the future, theoretically have an idea of an eternal reality, of an infinite reality, maybe a divinity in that kind of context, where everything is extended, everything is the present. It's not only this moment in time is the present is right across all of history, right across from the beginning to the end. And maybe everything is circular in this kind of context, in this infinity. So it has enormous implications, that idea of multidimensional time, space travel in terms of traveling through space, time travel, traveling through time. We talk about time warps. Maybe we're wasting trillions of dollars in terms of a whole space program. Maybe what we've got to do is just jump on, move across time, but the problem might be getting back. And the problem is authenticating it and proving it, because the experience, the best parallel I use, is maybe like a dream, but a very, very different dream.
So obviously this is, it's groundbreaking research. The next step, I mean, since it's based upon partly in mathematics and partly based on physics, is this something that can be replicated? Because as you well know, you've already encountered a lot of resistance, I'm sure, from colleagues. Anything new and groundbreaking always gets questioned. So is there hope that others can replicate what you're onto right now?
Not only hope. If one uses the right mathematics and one is a mathematician, you can replicate the mathematics right there and then. It's not difficult mathematics. It uses two new kinds of mathematics called dimensional extrapolation and calculus of distinctions. Won't go into detail for that, but the point about it is dimensional extrapolation involves moving across dimensions and extrapolating across there. And the other part of it, the calculus of distinctions, involves certain components of making distinctions at certain levels, one of which is this three dimensions of space, one moment in time. If people know this, it's easy to replicate. The difficulty that we have is it was based on a complex area of particle physics, so complex that nobody had been able to solve why this particular angle in quarks, a mixing angle, was 13.04 degrees. For 50 years, people were unable to solve it. We were challenged. We solved it. Very relative, very important, because nobody could solve it. They were thinking inside the box, three dimensions of space, one moment in time, instead of out of the box, nine dimensions. So yes, it's replicable. And not only this, it can be applied, of course, not only in the areas of physics and mathematics, but as you've seen, it can be applied greatly in consciousness research. It can be applied in terms of psychology and in terms of neurologic aspects of brain functioning. So it moves right across the spectrum of science, the physical, the psychological, the consciousness, the biological sciences, and it ends in philosophy. But it ends in a philosophy that is not based on, I think this, or I think that. The philosophy is grounded on science, and it has a whole new way of thinking in terms of science. So yes, it's very, very exciting, and it's ostensibly a profound discovery which may change a lot of perception of the world. It should, but you've mentioned resistance, and certainly you can imagine innovation is a twofold threat to academic mediocrities. It endangers their oracular authority, and it threatens that their carefully built edifice may suddenly collapse. This is Arthur Koestler, and certainly I think he expressed it very well.
We are talking with Dr. Vernon Nepi. He and Dr. Edward Close have developed a model which is outlined in his new book, Reality Begins with Consciousness, A Paradigm That Works. The website, again, is Vernon Nepi, vernonnepe.org, and brainvoyage.com, where these mentioned books can be purchased. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about a model that has the potential to really change the way you live and navigate your physical life and beyond. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Vernon Nepi. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and they can be found at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. And now, before we get back to our show, it's time for some Foundation messages for our listeners. There are three ways to show us that you like Signs of Life Radio. One, go to Signs of Life Radio page on Facebook and like us. Two, use the donate button on any of our weekly email show reminders to support programming. There's also a space to add a comment on what you love and what you don't like so much about the show. And three, remember us when you shop. Yes, when you shop, you can support the work of our 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without spending any additional money at all. First, you'll need a credit card to shop online. So if you don't already have one or are in need of another, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that's taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Second, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in the more than 1,300 online stores like Cheap Tickets, Snapfish, Yoga Accessories, a portion of what you spend is, again, donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our 7th annual Afterlife Conference will be held this year in beautiful and warm San Diego, California, at the DoubleTree by Hilton Golf Resort, November 9th and 10th. Mark the dates, as this will be the best one ever. Make your plans now for the Friday night banquet featuring Kim Russo, star of the hit TV series The Haunting of, as she will be bringing through communication from the other side following dinner. Then the conference begins early Saturday morning through Sunday evening, including featured presentations by Tom and Lisa Butler, Dr. Jeffrey Tarrant, research medium Janet Mayer, Dr. Stephen Browdy, Dr. Evan Alexander, and Lloyd Auerbach, with spirit communication demonstrations from certified mediums Laura Lynn Jackson and Angelina Diana. And as a special add-on this year, we bring you Medium Monday. So check the website for registration information now. Our holidays past raffle is in full swing, and you might want to get in while the number assignments are low, since a computer program pulls the winners by assigned numbers. The mediums in this raffle are Dave Campbell, Eliza Ray, Nancy Marlowe, Tracy Lee Nash, and Catherine Nadell. It's only $5 a chance. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Dr. Vernon Nephi. The current book is Reality Begins with Consciousness, A Paradigm That Works. Dr. Nephi, I mentioned some of your prior books, and I know that you're considered to be a world authority on déjà vu. And it seems to me that déjà vu fits in nicely with this new model of the nine dimensions, does it not?
Yes, the déjà vu phenomenon may well fit in with the nine-dimensional spin model, but only in the context of one particular kind of déjà vu. In other words, it's in the context of what we sometimes are calling subjective paranormal experience déjà vu, the paranormal component at the subjective level. And the reason why it fits in very well is déjà vu sometimes has major ostensible movements backwards in time, whereby one visits a place, it could be Versailles or wherever, and suddenly one's aware of many of the aspects of the past. It's almost as if one has been there before. So that is a time distortion, and the same kind of component in terms of a distortion in terms of future, knowing what will happen next. But this is specifically subjective paranormal experience déjà vu. And you can see how time is involved, how space is involved in terms of place, and how consciousness is involved, because this involves a particular kind of consciousness. So yes, indeed, those aspects are highly pertinent.
And you're obviously an expert not only in consciousness but on the human brain. So is it your opinion that the brain acts as a filter to filter some of these some of the information that surround us and remain hidden?
Very good question, Bob. You know, Henry Bergson used the term filter. In fact, people speak about the Bergsonian filter in terms of the brain. We use a different kind of metaphor, but it is very similar. We talk about the reduction valves. We talk about the fact that the brain could be totally overwhelmed if it received all the input that was around, that evolutionally or in some other kind of way, humankind, and all animals for that matter, have adapted to experiencing only that part of their reality that they're able to cope with. The rest is hidden. Now, if you want to call that a filter, you can. But we perceive this as a bidirectional filter. In other words, yes, some of the information may be filtered out. I gave the example even in terms of these physical reduction valves. You can see only to a limited degree. You cannot see in the infrared or ultraviolet spectrum, but machinery can help in that regard. Same thing with hearing. We cannot echolocate. So in this way, we could argue we're not necessarily filtering this out. Maybe we don't have that in the first place to filter. But then there's a lot of brain input that is coming in that we do indeed. But on the other side, we have the opportunity to interchange and to interact. This is bidirectional, these reduction valves. We have the opportunity to expand our reality, but the major component is one has to be able to cope with that expanding. And sometimes we expand our reality in dreams or in meditation or certainly in near-death experiences as reported. They, again, are subjective and out-of-body experiences, all of these are ways of expanding and maybe getting through that filter. But the bi-directional, the two-directional component, because if we look at it two-directionally and we look at this analogy of the tree with the branches, they interface all the time. My tree, my branches are interfacing with yours at the moment and with your audience for that matter. We're all interfacing. We're becoming a unit. We are units at not only this biological level, but the psychological and the sociological and the cultural level and the ethnic level and the broader reality kind of level. You can have 38 different levels of systems in terms of interfacing. And so this is why when we talk about a filter, I'm talking about bidirectionality, getting through the physical reduction valves, but being able to cope. When one doesn't cope, this may be one component of psychiatric illness.
Hmm. Yeah, well, you know, when you examine what's going on, you know, in the world today and in history, perhaps we would all benefit from the knowledge that we're all part of a system that's constantly interfacing and connected versus as being separate entities that never cross upon, you know, our fellow man. So, I look forward to your theories being, you know, proven so that people can learn that they're not sailing the ship alone.
Exactly. Yeah. There is a certain oneness. At the end of it all, you can express it philosophically. We expressed it as something which we called unified monism, which talks about the whole unity of all of reality, of the whole cosmos, of the finite being contained inside the infinite. So when we talk about nine dimensions, we're not only talking about nine dimensions, we're talking about all these quantized little pixels that are contained in this continuity of the infinite and the expression of everything.
So,
in our little
trees,
but there's a whole forest.
Mm-hmm. So the nine dimensions, including the three dimensions of consciousness, have always existed since the beginning, if you want to call it a beginning. I mean, was there a single point where the nine dimensions came into existence, or is it just, can we say, there is no starting point, it just always was?
Wonderful question. Two levels. At that finite level, you could argue about the Big Bang or the equivalent of the time before, just before the Big Bang. You could argue about the singularity and say that's when it all began, and you wonder about the endpoint destruction of the cosmos. There's a beginning and an ending. But at the infinite reality level, you've expressed what I feel as well. I don't think there's a beginning. I don't think there's an end. You know, there's a term called Ein Sof, which means without an end. And you could add to it the term Ein Tehillah, which would be without a beginning. And all of this reflects the infinite reality that exists, that has to exist. And you cannot go back and say, well, this is where it all began, because maybe it's all circular. Maybe it's all a broader framework of a gradual kind of growth. And in fact, this fits in. We've talked about nine dimensions, but it's actually a nine-dimensional spin model. And you can see the spinning component here, the vortical component, and the growth of this certain circularity where one grows and becomes higher and higher in terms of developing one's consciousness. It's a wonderful concept at that level.
So consciousness is not something that's stagnant. It's evolving. It's always evolving, and it'll continue to evolve.
I think it's dynamic, certainly.
Yeah.
Very much an evolution, very much a growth. It gives a whole perspective of a meaning to life, you see, and it also gives a perspective of you're in this tree, but you can choose different branches. You have a limited degree of freedom of choice, a limited degree of free will. Why is it limited? Because, of course, there's a whole forest out there. There's a whole existence out there you cannot impact. What you cannot impact, but you're beginning to be able to impact a great deal. We're on a radio program. We can potentially impact a large, large audience at this level. And so consciousness certainly is evolving, and it's growing, and we're touching one another all the time.
Now, you're going to be coming out with another version of Reality Begins with Consciousness?
Well, to a large degree, it's amazing. The book came out initially in early 2012, and we're already at the fourth edition. We think that this fourth edition is the final edition of Reality Begins with Consciousness. But we realized that many people might find it complex, because there are some complicated areas. Consequently, we've done one thing, and we're doing another. The one thing we've done is we produced Reality Begins with Consciousness key features, and we extracted components there, producing the key features in a book one-eighth the size, and we produced a whole series of diagrams and a glossary so people could understand and look at these diagrams and see how we are representing it as Reality Begins with Consciousness. Glimpses and glossary, which comes at this point complementary with either the big book, Reality Begins with Consciousness, A Paradigm Shift That Works, or the little one, Reality Begins with Consciousness, Key Features. But you're right. We are now also in the process of writing a book, which I suspect will be many books, called The Answer. And the whole Answer series, in terms of looking at this for the layperson, for the general reader, and trying to provide answers in terms of meaning based on our model. Our model is a very, very exciting one. Just to put it into a historical perspective, you may know that a century ago, Hermann Minkowski addressed a conference of German physicists and physicians and said, no longer do we have three dimensions of space with separate time. Henceforth, space and time are always linked. And we spoke about the fourth dimension. And now we're busy saying, no longer do we just have space-time. We always have space, time, and consciousness. They're always tethered together. They're always linked together. So this is the magnitude of what we are saying. And this is why we're coming out with The Answer. And we're working very hard at this.
Yeah.
To make it understandable for ordinary people.
Well, I think that's very important, and we anxiously await that. And I hope that you'll join us again when The Answer comes out. We have been talking with Dr. Vernon Nepi. The books are available on brainvoyage.com. And you'll find a wealth of information on vernonnepi.org. Dr. Nepi, thank you so much for joining us. And as I mentioned, I hope that you'll join us again very soon.
Yes, it's great being with you, Bob. And do remember those YouTubes on vernonnepi.org on the presentations. A lot of these ideas are clarified there, and we've done those already. Most of those are for the layperson, unless we've said this is technical. So thank you so much.
Thank you, and have a good evening.